Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the Sherpa. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Did I just say Sherpa?
No, you said welcome to the podcast. Why would you say welcome to the Sherpa? Because the Sherpa is a nation of people and also a last name and also an occupation.
Yeah. That's pretty good. Well, that's the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is Charles W. Chuck Bryant.
Tinzig Norgay Bryant.
Nice.
Sherpa?
Yeah. Yeah, Chuck, we're talking about Sherpa today.
Yeah, is it Sherpa or Sherpas?
I have no idea.
Because I see both in this article.
I do as well.
All right.
Let's find out, shall we? If everyone will just hold on a second.
Are you actually looking this up?
Chuck.
Most people do this before their hit podcast.
Have you ever seen, well, I'm sure this won't make it in.
You never know.
It'll never make it in.
I bet you does.
Have you ever seen Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, the first one?
That was not the first one. Yes, it was. Raiders of the Lost Ark was
yes,
the first one.
Yes, that's what I meant. I'm sorry.
Temple of Doom was two.
What was I thinking?
I don't know.
You've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Scores of times.
So you know when he goes to meet Marion for the first time after like 10 years after jilting her?
Yes. The drinking scene.
Yes. The guy, the huge guy that Marion is drinking with, or I guess in a drinking contest with.
Yes.
It's like they kept hearing me say Chuck over and over again, right? That, my friend, was a Sherpa.
Was it?
I'm pretty sure.
He looked Mongolian to me.
No, they were definitely in, like, Nepal.
Okay.
Yeah. It even said Nepal. Remember, he flies in the plane, boop, and it's like Nepal.
The little red line takes him to Nepal.
Yeah.
All right, so let's call him a Sherpa.
So Sherpas is plural of Sherpa.
That's what I thought.
I thought so, too. The Sherpa people are actually pretty fascinating. They're pretty isolated. And they haven't been where they are, which is the base of Mount Everest in the Solu Khumbu area region of Nepal for more than actually about 500 years. And when they arrived in the Solu Khumbu region, they found it uninhabited. And the reason why is because the Sherpas are pretty much the only people on the planet, besides maybe Ethiopian Highlanders or Peruvians in the Andes, who could conceivably live in this area because, again, it's at the foot of Mount Everest.
Yes, and we recorded a podcast on Tibetans and altitude sickness.
Yeah.
So if you want to know all about that, refer to that podcast. But Josh, you're right. They migrated from Tibet, from the province of Kham, to the northeast corner of Nepal around the 16th century because of warfare.
Yeah, and as I understand, they're very peaceful people.
Oh, very.
So they would have been fleeing warfare.
I would say so.
Yeah.
Not running toward it.
Right.
Headlong. So they migrated there. There was a lot more like forest and wood and fuel, for fuel at the time, which was good. And they could grow wheat and buckwheat at the time, and that's about all they could grow, but that was enough.
Right.
Later on, potatoes really changed the way they do farming because they grow a lot of potatoes now.
Yeah, I think the potato was introduced in the mid-19th century, and that kind of changed everything. 1880, I'm sorry. But if you think about it, these people, well, when they first arrived in the area, they moved to the Khumbu Valley, which is higher up, actually, than the Solu area. And it's about between 11,000 and 13,000 feet. And they're like, this is a little too high.
Yeah.
Everybody's a little sick. So we're going to move a little further down to the Solu region between 6,500 and 10,000 feet. It's still extremely high. It's still extremely rocky. And they whipped this part of the Himalayas into shape. They created terraced farm fields.
Guatemala, baby. Remember that?
Yeah. Down a slope, you can create. You can farm on the side of a mountain. People do it. But think about this. I mean, like, how did they figure that out? I'm very curious.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's not rocket science. You need flat land. And if you have a steep side of a mountain and you cut into that, you can create a series of steps, essentially, which is flat land. Jerry's in there laughing.
Yeah, I know. I would have been in trouble.
Jerry's like, I've been to Guatemala 3 times. I know all about step irrigation, and I know how to do all that
right.
stuff.
I would have been like, man, I wish it were flat around here. I guess I'll just sit here until I die.
Right.
So
you'd be a bad Sherpa.
Oh, I'd be terrible at it.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why I'd be terrible at it is because I will get in my car to drive 500 feet from, say, store to store.
Do you do that?
Yeah.
Like over there at the Edgewood? Like you'll go to Target and then you'll drive to Kroger?
I haven't been there in a while, but I have, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Totally. I mean, like, I'll walk. I walk more now than I ever have before in my entire
life.
Does it
depend on, like, the weather or what's going on?
Definitely depends on the weather.
Schedule.
It depends on my schedule
very often. I get that. If I'm in a hurry, I might do that.
Right. I would make a terrible stripper, though, because they don't have wheeled anything there.
A terrible stripper?
I would make both. Terrible both.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I know what Aaron Cooper is going to make this time.
Exactly.
Yes, as I just said, I think it bears reiterating, Mr. Joke Guy, there are no wheeled anythings there. There's no cars.
Yeah.
There's no wheelbarrows.
Yeah, they don't even use wheelbarrows.
Which, now we've reached another reason I would be a terrible Sherpa. They have to carry everything. I can barely carry a thing of dog food out of the grocery store to my car. And that's like with a cart involved.
Oh, goodness.
Which has
me.
Wheels, which they don't have in the Solu Khumbu region.
That's right. They carry everything, Josh. And they use, we actually saw this in Guatemala too, the plumb line?
Trump line. Yeah.
It's,
the plumb line is a little different.
Yeah. What they'll do is they'll, let's say, get a big load of firewood and they'll wrap it up in a,
spank it on the bottom.
Spank it on the bottom. They'll wrap it up and so they can wear it on their back in a big bundle and then attach to the top of you know, let's say they lay it in like a hammock and fold that over, a hammock-like thing. Mm-hmm. And then that is attached to a band that, you know, it's like a headband.
It's
so
like,
it goes around their head and it right. takes a lot of the weight off their back. And we saw these in Guatemala, dudes walking up the road. And I thought, man, look at that. That's like ancient engineering still in practice.
And you're like, man, I gotta do more of that. And you got back here and you're like, give me your cheeseburger.
And my JanSport backpack.
Anybody who's ever seen the front cover of Led Zeppelin 4 is familiar with this concept as well.
Was he wearing one of those?
He should have been. He wasn't, because that's a big old bundle of sticks that guy's carrying.
That was a bustle in his hedgerow. I know that.
So, Sherpas can whip a mountain into farmland. They can live on buckwheat and then several hundred years without the potato and then the potato.
And yak.
Yak.
Milk and yak meat.
Right.
Yak but cheese.
And yak.
Yeah.
They walk everywhere.
Yak butter.
They carry things everywhere.
With yaks.
They are basically a mountain. They're mountain folk. They speak a Tibetan dialect that's virtually their own. They don't have a written language.
No written language.
Until the 1960s, there was no formalized education. They just lived, they carved a very meager existence out for themselves.
Yeah. And thanks to a dude named Sir Edmund Hillary, they now have the foundation that he set up. And we'll get to Edmund Hillary in a second. But everyone, come on. You know who he is. He's the first man to ascend Everest with Tenzing Norgay Sherpa.
Yeah, to summit.
To summit. What did I say? Ascend?
Yeah.
Nah, I mean, what's you got to get to the top.
Right, or else what? It just blew $65,000.
Yeah, that's about how much it costs these days.
Yes, it does.
So through his foundation in later years, he became to love the peaceful Buddhist of the Sherpa people there. And so he's like, you know, I'm going to set up a foundation. We're going to do things like bring some schools, bring some hospitals, give these kids access to health care, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he did that, and that helped a lot. Although nowadays, you know, the schools aren't in great shape, evidently. It's kind of hard to get there. So they're doing what they can.
Right. You can take the folk out of the mountain, but you can't take the mountain out of the folk. You know what I mean?
That's right. They are very friendly, very peaceful, very compact, very strong, great attitudes, apparently.
And that's not just Chuck saying that. Chuck, you're basing that on the guy who basically took these very isolated, happy, self-sustaining, self-sufficient people,
mm-hmm.
mountain people, and introduced them to the world. Or no, introduced them to the people who would introduce them to the world, right?
Right.
What is the Englishman who's credited with saying, hey, if you want to get up Everest, you need yourself a Sherpa?
That was Alexander Kellis, not Tenzing Norgay, not Sir Edmund Hillary.
Right. Well, Tenzing Norgay was a Sherpa. He's far too modest, I'm under the impression, to have been like, you want to get up Everest, you get yourself a Sherpa. Sherpas, they're not big self-promoters.
No.
The English have been the biggest promoters of Sherpas. And Alexander Kellis was his name?
Yeah, Kellis.
He tried to make it up Everest and failed, but there was a point in time where, well, if you look at a mountain, it's not like a cone. You know those styrofoam cones that you can get at like the craft store?
Yeah.
That have like actual volume? It's a cone.
Yeah.
The mountain is not like that. It has all sorts of craggy peaks and different faces.
Sure.
And if you go up one side and make it up easy, that doesn't mean that you can go up any other side and make it up easy, right?
Yeah.
So the place where the Sherpa live is actually a pretty good way to get up Everest. But it was closed off. Nepal as a country was closed off to the rest of the world until I think 1949.
Yeah, Everest was confirmed as a highest peak in 1865, but it wasn't like all of a sudden the floodgates were open and every Brit in the world said, I must conquer that mountain. That they said that, but they were like, but how to get to it?
Right. And they
1949
thought,
it happened.
Right. But in between, they're like, well, let's just colonize that place and then figure out how to get up.
Yeah, exactly.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
True. And when India began colonizing, when England began colonizing India, Darjeeling across the eastern border of Nepal was a big popular tourist spot for British military, political officials.
That's big wigs.
That's where they met the Sherpa. And that's sort of where the mountaineering profession for the Sherpa kicked off, because all of a sudden there were Englishmen saying, I can now get in here to ascend and summit this mountain.
Right.
But I need some help because I'm not carrying all that junk.
Yeah. And it's not like Sherpas are the only ethnic group around Mount Everest, but as people soon found, like you said, they were sturdy. They are compact. They can carry tons of weight and they have a cheerful attitude. So, Alexander Kellis introduced the climbing community, the Western climbing community to the Sherpa. And in short order, Sherpas became extremely famous after, like you said, Sir Edmund Hillary summited Mount Everest.
Yeah, and he was one of 400 people on that expedition. I never knew that. I just thought it was Sir Edmund Hillary got in his car in England and drove to Nepal and said, hey, Tenzing, take me to the top.
Yeah.
But it was a big group of people, and they were the only two that made it.
Right. They were the last ones, and
crazy.
They just kept on going. But yes, it was Tenzing Norgay Sherpa.
That's his last name?
Yeah, because as you said at the beginning of this, it's a group of people, it's a profession, and it's a last name.
That's right.
So at that, from that moment on, everybody knew what Sherpas were, right?
Oh, yeah.
They were no longer confused with alpacas.
No.
In popular culture, people were like, oh, they're a group of people.
Yeah.
Literally the people from the East.
That's right. And they, like you said, they're not grandstanders. They don't get a lot of attention. And I made a joke. I believe it was either Dead Bodies on Everest or the Tibetan altitude sickness about Sherpas being unsung at the time, mm-hmm. about how you always hear about, you know, the Indian or the Brit standing on top of the mountain, and you don't see the Sherpa behind him
right.
carrying all their junk. And that's really true, because when, well, you know what I mean. When Hillary ascended and summited, he got a knighthood, and Norgay got an honorary medal.
And you think, well, of course. I mean, they're going to give the British guy the knighthood, and they're going to give the foreigner a medal. Untrue. Because Sir Edmund Hillary is from New Zealand.
That's right.
He wasn't British. So technically, he wasn't a citizen of Great Britain, and neither was Tenzing Norgay, and they still didn't get the same thing.
Yeah, it was called the British Everest Expedition, was the 400 people, so that's why I think a lot of people probably thought Hillary was a Brit, but he was not.
But again, our Western culture is a little different from Sherpa culture. They, like you said, they're not grandstanders. They're not publicity hounds. They are, the ones who are involved in climbing and trekking do make a pretty substantial amount of money, especially in comparison to, what the average person makes in Nepal.
Yeah, they make about $2,000 for a trip.
Right. And the gross domestic product per capita of Nepal in 2007 is like $331.
Yeah, that really puts it in perspective.
It does.
They're rich by their standards, I guess.
Extremely rich, very wealthy. But I guess in addition to making money, they help other people ascend Everest to attain their personal glory, right? For the other people to attain their personal glory. Which is kind of, there's a lot of dichotomy between how the Sherpa view Mount Everest and how they interact with it, that the Western influence kind of puts them in this weird position, because they are they follow a form of Tibetan Buddhism, which says that you should perform selfless acts and help others, right?
Yeah, and being at the top of Everest to them means you're closer to enlightenment.
Right. If the people are going to climb up anyway, you might as well go with them for $2,000, sure.
Sure.
But you might as well go with them to make sure that they don't kill themselves, right?
Yeah, very selfless people.
It is. But at the same time, they're helping the West kind of exploit Everest. Some people worry that the Everest experience is being cheapened since Hillary summited Everest. I think like more than 2,300 other people have, right? Kind of loses its closeness to the Buddhas. When, you know, all these other footprints are everywhere and there's a couple hundred dead bodies on the mountain.
Yeah, I think Norgay kind of summed up there how they feel about Everest when he called it, when they asked him how he felt about being up there, and he likened it to a mother hen.
Mm-hmm.
And said what else?
He said that this was, quote, warm and friendly living.
How about that?
Yeah.
And then Hillary shoved him back down.
He's like, quiet, you.
Get out of my picture frame, Norgay. Here's your medal. So like you said, the region now, Josh, because of the massive amounts of tourism, and not massive like Grand Canyon massive, obviously, but still for Mount Everest, it's a lot of people going there trying to climb it. We did talk about pollution there now. And so the very thing that brings the Tibetan Buddhist Sherpas enlightenment has also kind of denigrated the area somewhat.
Yeah, well, it's about 20,000 people pass through that area per year. And now you can go play pool, you have internet access, you have the trappings of modern living,
mm-hmm.
and you also have the drawbacks of modern living.
Deforestation.
Yeah.
Pollution.
Yeah, exploitation, that kind of stuff. Right?
That's right. And this is, we should point out, in Sagarmatha National Park, where about 3,500 Sherpas live, and Sagarmatha is the word for Everest, right?
The Sherpa themselves call Everest Chomolungma. Chomolungma.
Chumbawamba?
It's close.
No.
But that's not it.
Okay.
Chomolungma, which means roughly goddess mother of the world, or nice. Mother hen.
You want to talk about a couple of famous Sherpas?
Yeah.
We can talk about Edmund Hillary all day long, but you never hear about Apa Sherpa.
Yes.
And all he's done is ascend and summit Everest 17 times.
More than anybody else in the world.
Not bad.
Yeah.
What about Babu Chichiri?
Chichiri Sherpa?
Yeah.
Camped on the summit of Mount Everest for 21 hours without oxygen.
Yeah, usually what happens when you climb Everest is you get your picture made and you say, wow, this is really unbelievable. This is amazing. All right, let's go back down.
Right, and you have 5 million canisters of oxygen
yeah,
at your
I'm
disposal.
Dying
and right,
I'm really high.
Yeah.
Who else?
There's a Lakpa Gelu Sherpa, who holds a world record for the fastest Mount Everest ascent, 10 hours, 56 minutes.
And 46 seconds.
That's a lot.
Not bad.
Wow.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
You have Ming Kipa Sherpa, who, oh, what's the big deal with Ming? Ming just climbed Everest at the age of 15 years old. Not on his Xbox, in real life.
Yes. And then there's Pesang Lambu Sherpa, who was Chuck.
The first woman Sherpa to
yeah,
summit Everest.
Which apparently, when women started climbing Everest or serving as Sherpas, to climbing expeditions in the 70s. There was this is probably the biggest problem internally for the Sherpas, that Western tourism was having on their culture.
Yeah.
You know, a woman's place traditionally is at the farm. in Sherpa culture.
On the side of the mountain.
And I guess there was some static for a while, and then finally, you know, more and more women started doing it, and they were doing it successfully.
Yeah.
And that was that.
Yeah, and evidently when the husband, if the husband is the Sherpa worker, goes on one of these trips, then the female becomes the head of the household at home if she's not a Sherpa herself and will take care of things just like the husband would.
That's nice.
Yeah. You got, what else is there? I love these people.
I think we would be, you have a fond place in your heart for Sherpas.
Yeah, I mean, they remind me of the people of Guatemala, you know, kind of short and friendly and
warm, friendly living.
Stocky.
Yeah. It makes me kind of wonder. There's so many similarities, Chuck, that.
Huh?
Yeah. because think about it. Everybody calls the people the Sherpa, right?
Yeah.
They're people from the East, but that's in reference to where you are in Solu Kumba, Kumbu. Right?
Okay.
What were they called before they moved west? The people?
Mayan?
Maybe.
finally, Josh, for my part of this podcast, if you think
this one is off the rails.
If you think the Sherpa have it bad with not getting any recognition, there's also something called a porter.
Yeah, and a lot of Sherpas grow up serving as porters.
As porters. That's basically the job below the Sherpa who does even more of the heavy lifting and gets even less money.
And less oxygen, less clothing.
Yeah.
And other outer wear.
Yeah.
And there's an actual international porters group, right?
Yeah, protection group that are advocates for their safety and fair wages, because obviously if you've got a very poor person doing a lot of hard work, they're probably being taken advantage of in some way.
So, Chuck, we would be remiss to do a podcast on the Sherpa and Everest and Hillary and not mention the Yeti.
I don't know much about the Yeti. I didn't look at that.
So the Himalayas are the home of the Yeti.
The abominable snowman?
It's another way to put it.
Yeah.
Which is basically like the cold, extreme cold, high altitude version of Bigfoot.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. I just always thought that's what we thought of, but I didn't look into it.
No, it is pretty much.
Oh, okay.
It's a biped, a very furry, heavy, large biped that's mysterious and lives out by itself. It's Bigfoot. But in the Himalayas.
It's like in Empire, like on Hoth.
It's more like the Abominable Snowman in the Rudolph Christmas specials.
They look kind of like the thing in Empire.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Who looks like.
Yeah.
Tenzing
Norgay. Oh.
Wow. Anyway, Hillary himself was actually a believer in the Yeti. He went back after summiting Everest. He went back again in 1960 to look for the Yeti because he'd seen Yeti footprints, what he took to be Yeti footprints.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Interesting. He found nothing, though?
He didn't. And a lot of people think that these were just some other animal's footprints that melted in the snow and expanded as the snow melted.
Right.
Who knows?
Yeti, again, you have taught me something, my friend.
Thank you for that, because I couldn't figure out how to wrap this one up.
I feel like we should apologize for the light nature of this, but we just recorded right before this on the nuclear disaster in Japan, so I think we were rife for a little riff.
Plus, also, we should point out, in true Sherpa style, Chuck,
they'd want it this way.
Well, think about this. There are all sorts of trappings of Western influence and degradation of culture. There is a dwindling of population.
Yeah.
I think at its peak, this area was home to 25,000 people.
Yeah.
Now it's down to 3,500, like you said, in the park, right?
Yeah.
There was a National Geographic survey of Sherpas saying, are you concerned about Western influences on your culture? And they were like, not overly.
Can you hand me the TiVo remote? You're sitting on it.
Do you have any Mountain Dew?
Or Vault?
So that's it. A Sherpas. If you want to read more, there's actually some more in there, especially more on the their Buddhist religion, I believe. We didn't cover that fully.
Yeah, there's more goodness in there for sure.
Yes. You can type in Sherpas or Sherpa if you want to be safe in the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com.
Written by Kristen Conger of Stuff Mom Never Told You.
That's right. That's true.
Excellent podcast.
Yes, it is a great podcast. And they did a great job at South by Southwest.
They did.
And since I said handy search bar and South by Southwest, that means it's time for listener mail.
That's right, Josh. This is a little more Disney dirt. And most of the Disney dirt we got wasn't very good. We got a bunch of yeah, there's really nothing going on there. There's underground tunnels, but that's no big deal.
We got a lot of those.
And it's really not like you guys think. We finally got a pretty good one. And this is from M. And M seems like she would have been one of the employees that I might have been hanging around with that know about the dirt. Some people apparently don't even know about this stuff. And I hope we don't get in trouble for this. Hey, guys, I just finished listening to the Tickling Podcast. Excited that you asked for Disney Dirt. As a cast member at the happiest place on Earth for almost 4 years, I gleaned some interesting tidbits of information. For starters, in a workroom behind Pirates of the Caribbean, there exists an infamous Mylar table, which has a long-standing reputation for being a favorite place for cast members to be amorous with one another.
Ooh.
After hours. I can't imagine how clean such a table might be, but many cast members have been known to participate in tradition simply for the sake of being part of the legend. Sort of like the Mile High Club, I guess.
Huh.
On my attraction, the Jungle Cruise, it said that one can't be a real skipper until they have urinated into the river.
No.
That's what she says.
I suspected as much about... You know,
yeah.
you can create the happiest place on earth. But if you staff it with bored and nihilistic 20-year-olds,
yeah.
It's going to end up like this.
Yeah, someone's going to pee in the river. Most of the time, this is done before or after park operating hours when a skipper can take out a boat alone and relieve him or herself, often into the hippo pool. As you can imagine, it's harder for girls to participate in this rite of passage out of sheer logistics. But I do know some women who have managed to become real skips.
I think it'd be more physics than logistics.
She says the mechanics boggles my mind. Now for the gnarly stuff. Under Space Mountain, there are stored 60,000 body bags. Supposedly, they're there in case of a natural disaster or some other emergency where people may be trapped inside the park for an extended period of time.
I don't believe that.
I don't believe it either. The food freezers in the storeroom down the hall are also over 6 feet tall for storage, if you know what I mean. It's quite morbid and a popular site for telling ghost stories. I've got plenty more. If you want some off-the-record ghost stories, this was on the record.
Jeez.
Or personal anecdotes from my time as a Jungle Cruise skipper, I'd be happy to share. Keep up the great work from M.
Well, I would love to hear the off-the-record ones.
Me Chuck. Too.
What is her name?
M. I'd like to take her to lunch.
Yeah, well, please at least send us an email, okay? I don't think we'd be allowed to go out to lunch with that girl.
No.
Our significant others would kill us.
Yeah.
Chuck?
Josh.
You got anything else?
Nah, I'm done.
All right. What should we call for here?
How about if you've ascended Everest?
Nah, that's boring.
Okay.
If you are interested in your state seceding from its current geographical boundaries, we want to hear why.
That's right.
Send it in an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Childproofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/power safely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.